Hey everybody, it's the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and you are watching the Weekly Ringer series here on clanofthegreywolf.com. And there is a lot to do this week. I have a funny feeling we are in for just one hell of an episode today. I think it's going to be great. But one of the reasons why is because we got to set up, I think it's a special episode, because we've got to set up the question that will be used in the 100th episode of the Weekly Ringer, which is coming up next time. And something any of you that have been watching, whether you've been watching for three episodes, one episode, or all 100, and I know there's probably at least three of you out there that have been watching since the beginning of the series, this is one you're not going to want to miss. So next time, or I'm going to ask the question at the end of this particular episode that's going to be used in the 100th episode of the Weekly Ringer. So you're definitely going to want to see that one when it comes out, and think carefully about the question I'm going to ask. Anyway, so that means I funneled through all the submissions that you guys gave to me over the course of the last few weeks slash months. And, you know, have kind of come down to, I think, some of the ideas that I think are very good and work well. And I hope to be able to make some of those happen, including the question, which was indeed suggested by several of you in the community as well. So anyway, you're not going to want to miss that one next week, but we still got a big episode to do this week, which was obviously a very, very good topic to wrap up from last week. Also want to apologize for the lateness of this video. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I'm still kind of stuffed up. I got a little sick over the weekend, which is normally my shooting time, my editing time. And instead, I was just kind of sitting on the couch, looking out the window longingly at things that could have been done. And I didn't do them because I was just sick. So I apologize for that. But I'm here. And despite the frog in my throat and the stuffiness of my nose, I am talking to you now. So hopefully that that will be good enough for you guys. You know, my voice kind of ebbs and flows here, wanes and waxes. I have to apologize. I got to keep drinking lots of fluids just to keep myself, going today. Couldn't have picked a worse week to not have a voice, and that is because we have so much to talk about from last week's topic, which is really about embodying or occupying gender inside video game space, which I think was already a very interesting topic when I asked it, at least what I had in my head, which doesn't always translate 100% to what you guys are thinking about out there when I asked the question. But in this case, it turned out to be even better. There were a lot of other things that I hadn't considered or ways that this question went that I certainly wasn't thinking about before. And so, as always, you, the community, kind of made the question to something that it wasn't necessarily designed to be. So I'll talk about what I thought it was going to be. I'll give my answer to where I was going with the question, but then I'll also kind of talk about some of the things that you guys brought up as well. Remember, as I always do here on the Weekly Ringer, I go through your suggestions to the question from last week. I offer up what I think are some of the best ideas or some of the things that really struck me as particularly interesting. And then I will give you my own opinion, and then, of course, ask you the question for next week, which, as I mentioned before, you shouldn't miss, because it will be the question that I will answer during the 100th episode of the Weekly Ringer, which is sure to be a special episode. All right, let's get into things here. So there's a couple things that I always do here in the Weekly Ringer. The first one is that I always welcome our new community members, the folks that potentially have been watching for a while, or maybe silently lurking there out in the out in video land, watching us out there, but they haven't commented before. They are commenting for the first time. Or folks that just stumbled onto the series for the first time and, you know, said, hey, why not? What's another username and password? I'll just make a little comment here on the Weekly Ringer. In any case, remember, it is the comments, folks, that make that keep the show going. So I always like to highlight people that are new to the community and make sure we give them a nice hearty welcome as they step up to the plate and put some comments down. So this week, we've got a couple of people. We've got a few people we need to welcome. Doom Waves, apparently a loyal viewer of the Echo Screen Live, which is the other show that I run here at Clan of the Grey Wolf, and a big fan, but had never really checked out the Weekly Ringer, and did so perhaps because I made a suggestion on last week's Echo Screen Live to go and take a look at the current Weekly Ringer, which I thought to be particularly interesting. I don't know. I'm just putting the pieces together here, folks. That's all I'm doing. My job is just to... The old Commodore is always thinking. Wookie Locks. What an awesome name, by the way. I think that's a really cool Wookie Locks. It's an interesting little combination of characters there. A very insightful comment this week, I thought, as well, from Wookie Locks as well. So just because you're a first-time commenter doesn't mean you can't really put something out there that's not only insightful but can definitely be used in the show. So I thank all of you for making those kinds of contributions. They're what make everything so interesting to me. The next one I'm going to have a really tough time with because it's like an amalgamation of all these different characters kind of in one place that makes it very difficult to pronounce. So I'm just going to try a different couple ways and hopefully I'll hit the one that is the proper pronunciation. If I don't, I apologize in advance. Pranavmeno? Pranavmeno? I don't know. Pranavmeno? Am I missing something? Am I missing like a delineation here, like between, you know, pranavmeno? I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of. Generally, I'm pretty good at like dissecting license plates and like discerning meaning from those things. This one has just got me completely stumped. In any case, whatever the hell your name is, welcome to the Weekly Ringer community. Glad to have you on board, and I particularly like the icon that you had there with one of my favorite Sesame Street characters. Anyway, and then lastly, we also have Dem Man 8, which might be named, I don't know, as a response to this week's question about gender. I don't know. I'm not sure. But Dem Man 8, welcome to you as well. Welcome to all of you. Glad to have you on board here in the Weekly Ringer. As I say, comments are what keeps the show going, so I appreciate all of them. That being said, let's launch into the question from last week. I asked you if it was important to occupy a specific gender in video games. Now, before I get into some of the things that you guys said specifically, let me answer some of the kind of topics that were running through all the comments, some of the questions. I know a lot of times, you know, when I ask a question in the Weekly Ringer and things go really off the rails, I'll just kind of let it go off the rails. Sometimes I will actually go and write something and correct people and say, nah, this wasn't what I was thinking. Think more about this. I had a crisis moment a couple days into posting this where I kind of went, maybe I should have made myself a little more clear. Sometimes, folks, I write these questions and they're really, really clear to me. I know exactly what I'm thinking. I know exactly what I want you to say or what I think you're going to say because I have answers in my mind. You never ask a question without thinking of answers, right? And then I put it up there and I kind of go, I'm a little unhappy with the wording there. But that's okay. That happens to the best of us. Even the Commodore is only but a human and makes mistakes from time to time. In any case, let's go to some of the prevailing thoughts here. Number one, and several of you talked about this, thank you, is that, you know, we definitely need to differentiate here between gender and sex. Now, is that important because you have to define one of those in order to answer the question or pick one or the other? I don't think so. Not because they're the same thing. They're not. As several of you said, sex is a biological determination, a physiological determination, and gender happens to be a manifestation culturally, a manifestation psychologically, and probably an interesting, as well, an interesting kind of dynamic between cultural and psychologically, and where those things kind of dialectically come up against each other. But lest we get too philosophical, let's just keep it at that. So there is a big difference between gender and sex. Several of you answered this question, I think, more firmly in the... Did I just say firmly in a conversation about gender? I totally did. Interesting choice of words. I don't know. Let me rewind. Some of you answered that question as if we were talking specifically about sex. Some of you answered the question as if we were talking specifically about gender, and some of you tried to bridge the gap because you're just wonderful people that want to make everyone happy. Not a wrong answer, folks. Not a wrong answer here on the Weekly Ringer. Whatever you think you need to be able to put out there to answer the question, the way you think I ask it is what you should do. I only ask that before you start writing, you just think about what you're writing. And I have to say, one of the best things that I have going here on the Weekly Ringer is that I have some very intelligent commenters. You guys are wonderful in that regard. So thank you. There's a difference between sex and gender, definitely. It probably affects the way that you can answer the question, and it probably changes the value of importance. However, I would say that neither of those particular designations, sex, gender, exists 100% in a vacuum, and they feed off of each other in interesting ways. This is not a women's studies course, nor is it a course on gender or biological orientations, for example. And so I'm not going to go any deeper into that. I just want to say, though, those things feed into each other, and they're important. So that's why there really isn't a wrong answer. You could embody a particular perspective in sex, but it could really complicate the notion of what it means to embody a specific gender and vice versa. And several of you pointed out those examples, which is why I'm going to talk about them. In any case, the second thing I wanted to mention is that many of you had the perspective this week, one I think is insightful, that this question probably changes depending on what kind of a game you're talking about. And not just maybe a different kind of a game, as in a narrative-driven game versus a purely play or fun-driven game, what kind of genre you're playing and how that might affect the embodiment of gender or sex. Also, many of you talked about the activities. Maybe directly or indirectly, you mentioned the activities. You know, what are you doing in the game space as a character, and how does that affect your perspective on sex and on gender? I think that is a very interesting question, and one that probably is fairly malleable, if we're being honest. So, with that in mind, let's go on to the next thing that many of you talked about, which is that this begs the question of stereotyping, does it not? So we started to get into this is a part that I had no idea the question was going to go to. There are so many kind of tropes. There are so many different kinds of, and by tropes, what I really mean are kind of repeated arguments that, you know, take hold. They become part of the discourse that gets used, reused, and sometimes even overused in video games. Several of you mentioned some of them, like the fact that female characters are often weak. And as a characteristic, they are weak, they are helpless, and they require saving. They are the damsel in distress in many ways. Some of those are sex constructions, some of those are gender constructions. We could talk about that in another time. The point is, they are in many cases stereotypical. Is this problematic or is it not? Or does this make the game even more enjoyable? Does it perhaps shed light satirically on the value that we place as a society on gender and on sex? I don't know. But I think an argument compellingly can be made in both scenarios. But what I do think is that this question has kind of brought to the fore another question about what stereotypes really are and what kind of sexism might or might not be evident inside video games. A topic which we have actually covered here previously on with the Weekly Ringer. And so I hope you can kind of tune back and take a look at some of those if you're interested in that question. Now, those are the things that I found that were, you know, particularly interesting throughout the comments. Let me get into some of the specific things that you guys said. Nightwolf said, you know, maybe embodying or occupying a particular gender is not always important, but sometimes it's necessary. As in, really, that, you know, the conversation we just had, right? So the idea of a story-driven game where you are given information about graphically, through implication of text, through the narrative, whatever the case might be, whether it's direct as you see something, or it is indirect as in you feel something or hear something, or you are given the impression of a specific gender or a specific sex in a game. That happens at times. When you turn on Tomb Raider, it's impossible to not know, because of the third-person perspective, that Lara Croft is indeed a woman. Lara Croft might defy certain gender roles, which is what I was really trying to ask about this week. Is it okay to occupy a specific gender role in Lara Croft? But, in other words, the game and the designers of the game, vicariously, provide you with the information that she is definitely a woman, and she definitely has certain traits and characteristics of a woman, even if she defies certain gender stereotypes or fights against some of the cultural gender constructions around her sex, as it were. So that's one scenario. What about another scenario? A scenario in which you embody a particular character in perhaps an avatarial relationship, but you don't have any kind of visual clues as to what that character is in terms of sex. Now, here you have to kind of infer certain kinds of gender, but I think Nightwolf's point is that, you know, at that point, it is not overt. It becomes something that's more constructed from you. That scenario is what I'm really interested in. So I get completely what Nightwolf's saying. I want to laser focus in on the fact that if it doesn't give you any visual cues, and if it doesn't give you a lot of gender clues, what do you do then? And I'm going to formulate my own hypothesis about that later on in the show. Anyway, cool comment. I like that. Marquis talked about occupying gender is a necessity. And that disconnection from it is alienating. I think this is a great point. And I think it's, I threw the term alienating in there. I used that that was not Marquis's term. I put that in there to kind of summarize the argument, by the way, but I think it's a good one. Marquis's point is that we occupy gender as a matter of course. As a matter of fact, as soon as we turn on any game, we are occupying a specific gender, regardless of whether we want to or not consciously. Interesting thought, huh? This is closer to the thought of what I was really asking about for this week's ringer. But I love the next step. Disconnecting from a gender role is alienating. This is an interesting thought. Now, forget sex for a second. Let's talk about a gender role. So if you disconnect from a gender role, from a gender inside of a video game, as in, you're playing Minecraft. You never push the button that zooms out and shows it a third-person perspective. You just get born into a world that is first-person and you can see around. What kind of clues would you have about the gender of this particular being? Would it be, their capability to punch a tree and tear it down? Is that a more masculine thing to do? Would it be the capability to, farm? And produce and provide, which could be construed in many different ways, both from a masculine and feminine point of view. I think in that case, right, there's really not a lot of clues there. There really aren't a lot of indicators that would help you understand or discern that. Doesn't mean you don't create it. What I think it means is that if you were to somehow flip the switch in your mind that could turn off your gender association with the main character in Minecraft, I think it would be very alienating, very foreign, and I think it would also be what we call uncanny. It resembles real life, but it only does it in such a way that it kind of is hideously ugly and weird because it's not the same at all. It's different, it's strange, it's crazy, and it makes us kind of distance ourselves from it. That, I think, is a great point. And I think Marquis kind of starts the work of where of how we get there. And I think that's an awesome, awesome comment. And one that I think I could continue to unpack for the rest of my time in the show. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to move on to other comments. Vulcan Assassin talked about certain games lose part of their effect. Now, we'll talk about what effect means in a second. When gender is reversed or challenged or, you know, thrown up against cultural norms, whatever you might want to say, I think this is a great comment. Now, certain games lose part of their effect. Now, what are the effects of games? What does that mean? Does that mean you can't, that you have less fun in a game when gender is reversed? If you walked into a fighting game and the women were strong and brutes, kind of like strong brutes, and the men were quick, kind of weaker but fast characters that could kind of land blows quicker, that's just a fighting game, right? Does that make the game less fun? Does it make the game less immersive? Does it make the game less interesting as a gamer or as someone watching or observing games? That is a critical question. Now, I don't know what necessarily the effect of games might be, but whatever a designer is doing to as a designed effect, and I think generally that tends to be fun. People want you to have fun when you play a game. I think it's very possible that if you mess the gender roles up, if you change things, you move things around, you try to create your own rules, or you tie them firmly to sex, for example. In other words, if you make them a little unrealistic, a little too unrealistic, I think then what ends up happening is games can lose their effect. And I think that's a good point. I'm not sure that they become unplayable or not at all fun, but I do think they probably lose some element of their effect. So I agree with Vulcan Assassin there. Mr. K made a great designation here that I think is worth repeating, and that is utility versus functionality. He's using this as a way to really summarize, I think, a lot of the arguments that have been made. Utility being a certain specific capability or series of capabilities inside of a game that make it that make a character more capable, that make that have utility in the game, right? So, you know, if I can use a character with longer legs, I'm going to do that. If that character is a woman versus a man, I might be less interested in that because the utility is better to have longer legs. I can hit someone with them, right? You know, there is a discernible utility advantage in the game to embodying a particular character. That is one thing, okay? Versus functionality, which is more along the lines of what, I'm not sure I agree with the terminology with functionality, but I'll just go with it for a minute to talk about, I think this is more along the lines of what several of you were talking about in terms of the function of the story, the function of how the characters fit into a narrative that is somehow compelling to you. That, I think, those are two different things, right? One is about really make gaming the system to have a competitive advantage. One is about fitting into a narrative or fitting into a universe that's been created for you by embodying a specific gender characteristic or series of gender characteristics. This is, I think, the best way to think about the division of how sex, and then conversely also I think there are pieces of how gender gets created in video games and how it gets divided along a singular line, a singular divide, if you will. The utility versus functionality, I think, is a great way to think about it. So I thought that was a very insightful comment. Physics of video games mentioned two things that I want to highlight. This was, I thought, a very, very well thought out series of comments. If you haven't read this yet, you totally need to read the whole thing. Number one, Metroid. So think about Metroid as a gender reversal, not a sex reversal. Now there is a bit of sex reversal if you were just watching and thinking you were playing as a man, and then you wind up finding that Samus Aran is actually a female. Excuse me. That is a sex reversal. However, physics of video games instead breaks down the very fact that because Samus embodies a different kind of gender role, as in, yes, it is a woman, whether you know that or not, but she embodies specific gender, more masculine gender traits, that is why it becomes interesting. It's less interesting that, you know, you have a woman there who is in a bikini underneath the suit. It's more interesting that a woman inside the suit can do all of these things that you were more than likely associating with a man when you began the game. Whether you read the booklet that was associated with the game or not. She blows things up. She's got missiles coming out of her arms, right? I mean, these are not things that generally get reserved for female characters or for feminine characters, to put it in gender terms. As a result, what we end up doing, I think, we find it interesting because Samus kind of defies those. She is something different. And every game that you play as Samus from that point forward is probably a little bit different, knowing the fact that Samus is a female sex, kind of embodying certain attitudes or, at the very least, social constructions of what it means to be male, even though she is, in fact, a female. So it's an interesting point, one that I think is absolutely spot on. I agree with it 100%. Number two, this is the other point that was made. Gender constructions. So the way that gender constructions get depicted inside of the game, right? Again, not sex, not the way that they overtly show you a part of the female anatomy so you know what a character is in terms of sex, but gender constructions make characters more believable. They make characters more inhabitable. They make characters more immersive, which I think is the point that the physics of video games is making. I think this absolutely speaks to the heart of why I was asking the question. When you fit into a particular universe, you fit in because of its ability to capture those attributes of masculinity or femininity and the realistic embodiment of those attitudes and those attributes of masculinity and femininity. Take something as simple as Mario Brothers, where you have, where you are given, I think, overtly the little pixel, you know, here's Mario jumping across the screen. This is a man, right? Or at the very least, it is a male sex. But the whole point of the game is that Mario is doing superhuman kind of stuff. Eating mushrooms, jumping on things, risking his life, dying frequently in order to save his girlfriend. I guess necessarily a girlfriend, but the princess, okay? So the princess is in another castle. Mario is there to save her. Whether or not she has a romantic interest probably is less important. The important part is the princess has been taken. Mario's sole motivation in working in this entire game is to save the princess. That is a construction of gender, not of sex. It makes the character more endearing. It makes the character more believable. And I think it adds to the effect of the game. We just talked about that. But it also makes the game more immersive and more fun to play. If you're sitting there and you're just a character that's jumping across stuff to do things, that's fun. How many platformers came out for the NES and the SNES? Or Genesis, right? Really any of that generation of video games. More than you could possibly shake a stick at. How many of them are really compelling? And forget, and I know many of them are not compelling because they're virtually uncontrollable and terrible games. But one of the reasons they're not good games is because they don't give you that kind of premise. No one thought about where this person came from. No one thought about where, you know, that this person has an existence, has a gender, has a backstory that makes them compelling. And I think whether you think about it or not, When you learn that Mario is going to save a princess, the game becomes more compelling. Whether you're a female gamer, a male gamer, so that's sex, or whether you occupy a masculine speech community or a masculine kind of way of observing the world, or a feminine one, I think the game becomes more compelling when you realize that Mario is trying to save a princess. It's more believable. Because whether that is because we have socially been constructed by all the things that we see, that that's what these male characters are supposed to do, that's what makes them masculine, or whether it's something innate, more to nature, I don't know, that's not my business. My point is, it becomes more compelling. And many games are probably the exact same way. I'll pose a hypothesis about that in a little bit. In the last comment I wanted to talk about, was Troy Loza-Tomata, who talked about the embodiment of roles in Team Fortress 2, which I thought was really cool. It was a neat little analysis, right? A game that does not overtly have any women in it, per se. There are no women, female, there are no female characters, sex, okay? What there are patterns that are observed by Troy Loza-Tomata about the specific roles that these characters play, and then what sex picks these roles. Okay, so, you know, I think everybody knows what kind of a role a sniper has, or a, you know, a heavy weapons guy has, right? A heavy weapons guy is there only to just blow stuff up. He's a tank. That's his job. He's probably going to die some, but he's also going to kill a lot of people in the meantime. The thought from Troy Loza-Tomata is that that's very rarely a female character, because the role tends to be more masculine. I'm just going to go in there, guns blazing, and blow the hell out of everything. Again, not a generality, not a 100%, you know, it's not 100% that way. It's not a certainty, it's not a fact. It is a pattern, right? And an interesting and observable one. But something like a medic, a spy, things that don't necessarily have to encapsulate or embody a particular gender or sex role, for example, I think is interesting and compelling, because there are a lot more female sex gamers that embody feminine gender view of the world, or activities that you would undertake in the world of Team Fortress 2 that fit the spy or the medic. And the activities that they can undertake. That is insightful analysis, and one that I have not personally experienced but would like to see, because I bet you that that becomes a pattern in video games that allow for such kinds of things. I've never played a ton of MMORPGs with tons of people, but maybe some of you out there could relate to that concept as well. Maybe you could tell me. Do you find the roles that people kind of actively embody inside games is reflective in some way or indicative of their sex? A fair question, to be sure. Okay. A lot of comments today, a lot of good stuff, but I want to get to my perspective on this. There are a lot of things I want to cover. One is that, you know, the idea of embodying gender, to me, is important. And it's important for one reason, and that is that we're human beings that embody gender specific. Now, whether you happen to be transgendered, asexual, as in living in a place where sexuality isn't even really a part of your life, whatever the case might be, wherever you kind of sit on that spectrum, I think what ends up happening for most of us, if not all of us, is that we always already, that's a philosophical term we use quite a bit to make ourselves sound smart, always already embody a specific gender. When you push the button on a video game system, a console, to turn it on, when you boot up a game, you are always already embodying a gender. I don't know that there's any rule that says that gender has to be the same as yours. I'm just saying you're always already in that mode. I'm in the mode, okay? When I boot up Metroid for the first time, me, personally, I am a man playing a game, And then when I receive the visual confirmation of Samus in this suit blowing stuff up, I go, yeah, Samus is a man like me. So I've already embodied that gender. Now, is that important? That becomes the question. This is at the heart of what I was asking for this question, for this week. I think that we always already have that in our minds. It's part of the apparatus of video games. It's part of what makes video games interesting and fun. When I go to a film, I'm always a viewer. I'm always watching something. I am watching that in a particular gender role. I am watching that as a man. Two different things, a gender role and a man, right? Sex. But I'm thinking about how I process that film, that TV show, whatever, right? When I jump into a video game, there is an avatarial relationship. I am somehow controlling what's going on. It's not necessarily interactive as much as it is, I think, it is immersive, right? So I am being immersed inside this world. I haven't just been invited here to kind of watch as a fly on the wall, or even, you know, from a particular perspective of the camera. That's the apparatus of film. I am now actually an active participant within this universe, and I am able to change it, or change pieces about it, or affect the way that things work inside of it, be it small or be it huge, right? That, to me, is a unique proposition with video games. It's what makes video games compelling. I will probably talk about this at Con Bravo during our Philosophy of Video Games panel. So if you're going to be at Con Bravo, you should totally check that out. I will be on that panel and probably talk about this. But the point is, we are always already embodying a gender role, in my mind. This is my hypothesis. Before we even do anything, and what we do is we probably tend to copy our own 9 times out of 10, if not more than that, if not all the time. When I turn that console on, when I boot up that game, I, now a part of this game, not a viewer of the game, a part of this game, embody my particular gender. It is a mirror of reality in some ways. That can change, that can be different, because then all of a sudden you see something that changes or challenges your idea. Or perhaps you make the choice that challenges your idea. For example, Skyrim is one of my favorite games that I've ever played. I've only had one character in Skyrim, and it's a female character. Okay? Now, the things that I do with that female character, or, you know, beating stuff up, for example, tends to be more of a masculine gender role, right? So it's almost strange. But when you look at my female character, and, you know, decked out in armor and masked up and everything, can't see the face, kind of looks like a guy. And I think that makes some kind of sense, because if you were going to walk around hacking and slashing people, it probably would be a good idea to cover up and look something like a guy. Otherwise, you're probably putting your life in jeopardy. The point is, whether or not I might be simply taking my own gender role and projecting it onto the character, but she is a female. It is a female character. That is significant. I've chosen the different, a different course for this character than who I am myself. Yet, I still think, folks, at the core of it, I'm embodying a masculine gender within that person, because it's an avatarial relationship. They are doing the things I'm doing. Now, that being said, how many of you have played a game and you get frustrated, you get pissed about something? You think, oh, this is terrible, right? You know, you're running away from a fight, and you can't. You start backing up, and you run into a wall, and you're like, "What the hell? Get out of there!" Are you saying that to yourself? Are you going, "Yeah, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I got to do this. I got to do that." No, I've never seen that. You know what I've seen is people screaming at the TV as if they are talking to someone else, even though they're controlling. What the hell are you doing? God, she would never move. Why wouldn't she freaking move? Right? Does this sound familiar to anybody? What I think that means is that even though I embody that character as a kind of avatarial relationship, I still separate who that person is in this game space from me. I am controlling things. I'm trying to move things around. But this is a person that I'm controlling that lives in this other universe. Does that make sense? So what I'm really saying is that I'm still, in that sense, because I'm divided. Now, wait a minute, you can complicate this too by saying, when I die a lot of the times, I don't go, oh, they died. Well, she deserved it. She's dead. Sometimes I think that. But I go, I died. I'm dead. Time for me to start over. I got to do this a different way. So there's an interesting kind of break here. I don't know what that indicates, except for the fact that it's probably loose. It probably can go a lot of ways. But what I think it doesn't, what doesn't change is that I embody a particular gender role within the character. And then that character gender role gets played out over time, depending on how I control it. Whether I am 100% in that character in terms of sex, I'm aligned with them, they are me, or whether they are only a reflection of my personality, so on and so forth, or have nothing to do with me physically in this universe. The point is, I think we always do it. We always identify that way. And for me, that is why embodying a particular gender, occupying a particular gender within a game, is not only important, it's necessary. And I think that when we look at even games that are probably genderless, like a Space Invaders, which was highlighted several times, we probably get more immersed in that for reasons that have less to do with sex or gender than we do with simple immersion. We simply think to ourselves, that is a part of me now. This little thing that's moving across the screen is kind of like my finger. Now it's just a part of me. And if I move, if it gets hit, I'm dead. If I move it, it's okay, right? How many of you have ever played in a video game and you found it nearly impossible to disassociate yourself to the context within which the game has presented you? So, for example, standing up on a high building in a Spider-Man game, that'd make any of you that were afraid of heights a little more woozy? You were kind of like, I don't really want to jump off of this? Well, is there any reason that you were in physical harm because of the game? No. What you've done is you've been immersed in that game so that you feel that you have some skin in it. I don't want to jump off and die. I don't want to jump off this building. I'm kind of scared I'm this high anyway. You ever been inside a game and been frightened because something was running at you that you didn't like, went to attack you, what have you? I know I have been. If you have been, then there you go. You've been immersed inside that game. It's now a part of you. It's avatarial. And maybe that immersion has less to do with gender and less to do with sex, but I still think what you're actually doing is taking a part of you and you're putting it into the video game. And that is part of the video game apparatus, which in my mind distances video games from film, from TV. There are a lot of film and TV scholars, by the way, that would completely disagree with me in that regard. I want to make that very clear. I've met some of them. The point is, though, that I think that is a differentiator. I think that's what makes things unique. And I think that's why all of us love video games, because we can take a part of ourselves, put it into a different place, and see what happens, and see the kind of things that result, and play in someone's game, do things that we couldn't normally do, and see what happens and what kind of interesting combinations come out of that. That is what makes video games fun. It's what makes video games artistic. And I think it's what also gives them a lasting impression with us, which I think is one of the reasons that all of us love video games and why we're here talking about them right now and why you've listened to me prattle on about it for about 40 minutes at this point. Okay, that is how I'm going to wrap up last week's question. Great conversation. A lot of cool things to talk about. By the way, I did happen to write my master's thesis about this particular topic. None of this particular topic in general. Actually, I wrote it about the constructions of gender in contemporary video games and the way that those things are problematic and some of the examples of how video game makers can do things a little bit better. Not by, toning down all of the sexism as much as by creating good examples that I think defy, the way Samus Aran does in some ways, the gender characteristics that are, I think, problematic and will help us kind of have a better conception of sex and of gender if we employ them correctly. Okay, it is time. It is time right now for me to move to the question that will be answered next time. And I will tell you it's probably going to be fairly soon. So get your answers in when you can for this. I want you to think deeply about it. Several of you gave me a lot of wonderful questions, some of which I might actually, I know I will use on other occasions, because to me, they are good questions that need to be asked. But I want to ask, I had to pick one for the question that I asked for the 100th Weekly Ringer, the 100th episode that I have sat in front of the camera and talked nonsense. The show that began with short 5 to 6 minute videos and now result in almost hour long episodes. I am so sorry, folks. The point is, here we are, we've made it. I need to ask a question that's going to get everybody fired up and get everybody moving, because we really need to get a lot of responses for this one. I will just tell you that you will not be sorry for the results when you put some thought into this and give me your choice for the answer to the question for next time. And without further ado, here is the question I will answer, and you should answer for the next week, for the next Weekly Ringer. The question I have for you for next time: what is the best Super Nintendo game of all time? That's the question for next time. That was actually submitted to me by a fan, and I thought it was such a difficult question to answer that we really, really needed to take this one out as a 100th episode question. So, take some time to think about it. Play a little video games, you know, play a little retro games if you want to. And make sure that you answer it as quickly as you can, because the 100th episode is right around the corner and we're going to make a show of it. Trust me. So, without extending this any more than I need to, be thinking about Super Nintendo for next time. But that will conclude the Weekly Ringer for this week. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thank you for commenting and keeping the show going up to 100 episodes. This has far exceeded all of my expectations and hopefully yours as well. It's great to have all of you with me. I'm certainly not going anywhere. There are many, many more ringers to go, so don't worry about that. But as always, I am the Commodore from the Clan of the Grey Wolf, and there is no reset button.